I'm Brian DeShazer, the director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and thanks for listening. All right, so I think I want to talk first about the Archives Fund Drive Day, November 28th and 29th. On the day of, we ended with raising $256,000 in 42-hour broadcasts. That exceeded our goal of $200,000. Originally, we had set a goal of $280,000, which we just didn't believe that we could do because we still weren't really confirmed with how many stations were going to carry both days. So it was a success. And since that day, we've gained up to $277,000 worth of pledges and have balanced December month of that booking to the penny and balanced the revenue codes to the penny, auditors. Thank you very much. So things are going well in the archives. The Archives Fund Drive Day also included, prior to the day, I gave over 30 interviews on XM Radio with Ambrose Lane, Air America, INN News World Report did a 15-minute segment on Thanksgiving Day and repeated it 3 days in a row. So that video is on their website, INN News World Report. And so in terms of promotions of the archives, I think that exceeded my expectations on how many people outside of Pacifica listenership now knows about the Pacifica Radio Archives and Pacifica's mission. It also included the testimony before the Library of Congress's National Recorded Sound Preservation Board, which I think coming into the archives and not knowing much about archiving, whatever goal I could have set, that testimony far exceeded anything I could have ever dreamed about. The reason being, the Library of Congress National Recorded Sound Preservation Board was established by Congress in the year 2000 to give a study throughout the United States on the state of preservation of audio. The reason why the Pacifica Radio Archives was invited by that national board was because of the work that we had done, because of our standards and practices, and because on our website, every grant that we've done and all the projects that we've done, we've shared the materials that we did. In other words, techno reports, best standards and practices, database recordings, and we recently did an inventory that was through the Ford Foundation grant. So the Library of Congress, there was one other gentleman that was invited to testify in Los Angeles who represented radio, which was Armed Forces Radio. The Pacifica Radio Archives was the only invited person, the only invitee to represent community radio across the board. In other words, what the responsibility, the heavy weight on my shoulders for that testimony was to instill to the Library of Congress and this National Recorded Sound Preservation Board that what public radio does, what listener sponsorship does, is to create a cultural heritage, and that what we have in recordings and what the Pacifica Archives represents in those recordings is so important to American cultural heritage that it belongs in the Library of Congress, not just in the second floor of KPFK in Los Angeles. So I really cannot tell you how proud I am of the archives staff, our archives consultants, Addie Gevins, and the expert consultants that worked with us through the past 5 years of grants, successful grants from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Grammy Foundation, to get to the point where we were respected enough to be invited to testify before that board. And it also does something else, which the Library of Congress, this board, and Congress are now, that's where the table is of the decision-making of how much money is devoted to audio preservation in the United States, and where does it go, and what are the standards. So now the Pacifica Network, the Pacifica Radio Archives, is at that table to help make those decisions. That's worth a little applause.
Catch your breath.
All right, so coincidentally, that testimony in Los Angeles was coincided with the broadcast of the fund drive. So on all five stations, they heard the audio testimony about a half hour after I gave the testimony live on the air during the fund drive.
But
And
in that hour, huh?
Did you put it in the archives?
Of course we did put it in the archives. And actually, you can find it on our website. You can listen to it and read the transcript. But what was extraordinary is the last hour of that fun drive, when we played that testimony, that was the record-breaking hour of all 42 hours. We raised $27,000 based on that testimony. And it also does something else. What does it do? Well, we'll figure out what it does later. All right, so the Ford Foundation grant, if you notice on the website right at the top, it says protest rallies and demonstrations with a nice little logo of signs. The Ford Foundation grant was $25,000, which gave us the opportunity to identify protest rallies and demonstrations recordings that would otherwise not be designated for funding for preservation by the NEA in the arts, the Grammy in terms of music, or the NEH, possible NEH humanities. So what we were able to do is identify protest rallies from the 50s, the women's movement, the gay and lesbian movement in 1979, and ultimately what we've done is all the audio is available on streamed, transcriptions are available for the hearing impaired, and also we have something really important in terms of contextualization. What do these really mean? I just recently came back from New York last week, where I met with Amy Goodman, who was sort of taking on the job of writing an essay to contextualize these. Well, that sort of didn't happen, but what I was able to do is go and interview, and I played the clips for her. We played some of the interviews. She gave her impressions and, again, how important these recordings are to her as a journalist today and how important they would be to researchers and journalists of tomorrow. So that Ford Foundation grant has really sort of set us apart again on what we do and how we select materials from the archives for preservation. 2 weeks ago, we were notified by the National Endowment for the Arts that we received, yet again, the fifth grant from the National Endowment for the Arts for Preservation and Access. That grant is $15,000, which will include further audio preservation, folio program guide digitization, and optical character recognition, and also an assessment of our physical plant. So somebody will come in and take a look at, can we convert our current space into proper preservation room? You know, can the material be transferred appropriately while somebody's actually listening to every nuance? So we'll have one, either a way to transfer or adapt our current space into that, or it'll at least give us the specifications to go into an outside space, which we really need to do, which, don't let me forget, that will be my last point. Thank you, Dave, for mentioning the archive definition. In the earlier discussion, I was actually confused when people used the word archives, whether they were talking about the Pacifica archives or the website archives. And unless somebody pointed at me or called me by name, I wasn't really sure. So I appreciate you understanding that the archiving is a science. There are schools devoted to the science, and the archives is living up to those standards. So I want to be sure that that is maintained and that that archive word is not used so loosely that it diminishes and undermines what we actually do. So I appreciate that. From the Vault radio series is now bigger and bolder than ever. We've done 38 programs, and we are working to launch that on a national level, which will be included at the next PNB meeting. So that's exciting. And I guess the last thing I really want to talk about is, in the last PNB meeting, there was a motion that was passed to assess the station's $150,000 each year for the next 2 years for tape preservation. And in that, it was designed for me to come back and tell you what I could do with that money and if there was a real plan. Addie Gavins and I did talk to our audio preservationist in Philadelphia, George Blood, who does have the appropriate rooms to do the nuance preservation flat transfer and is the guy that we've sent all of our tapes through all those grants to for that preservation. He is able to take on the work that would be paid for by all the monies, so we wouldn't have to sort of outsource it to different people. He could take on the entire work. It's just a matter of, can the archive staff take on the entire work of that kind of a bold project? So I have a proposal, an idea more or less than a proposal, which is In 2008, next year, will be the 40th anniversary of 1968, the most important year in terms of social movements. What is unique about Pacifica in 1968 is what we have in terms of the collection is what is unknown from everybody else. Again, 1968, nobody else was on the ground doing anything. It predated NPR and PBS and all of that. So what it has in the archives in 1968 is the extraordinary Pacifica. So what I propose is that we start working on the 40th anniversary of 1968, the Pacifica 1968 Comeback Special, as I call it, to start now to preserve those materials that are designated by 1968, whether it be the civil rights movement, the year of the gay and lesbian movement, which started in 69, the environmental movement, the women's movement. It's all there. So if we start preserving... I'm sorry? Yeah.
American Indian movement.
I mean, Native American Indian movement. Sorry if I can't think of all of them on the top
free
of my head.
Free speech movement.
Free speech movement, indeed.
Yeah.
So that was UC Berkeley campus, Sproul Hall. In fact, this week, this week's From the Vault series, which was just distributed yesterday, is about the Sproul Hall sit-ins. So that's really exciting. So the proposal really is to start now with preservation of tapes from 1968 so that it can be distributed throughout the network for a year-long broadcast dedicated to the 40th anniversary of when Pacifica was in its golden era, and so that we can reinvigorate what Pacifica is. So if you can sort of dream about how would you hear 1968 again, and how can it move forward the social movements of today that were so successful in 1968 because Pacifica Radio was there. So that's my sort of idea proposal on how to sort of utilize this motion and the monies to be effective and not just dumping money into the archives for preservation and then it sort of turns back into another garage.
Okay, we have about 7 minutes now for questions. So we're going to – did you want to wrap up?
Fine.
So
other than thanking the archive staff and the volunteers and the great – people that were there for the Archives Fund Drive Day, some amazing work that was done by Mark Torres, Christopher Sprinkle, yeah. Nani Singer, and the Ballad of Pete Seeger program and the Studs Terkel program.
Excuse me, sir, you said you were going to close with a comment about location, space or something.
Oh,
like that.
Yes. In my board report from last time and this time, the building campaign, it is absolutely critical that the archives find a new building. The space, we have three off-site storage units that are now done. There are no off-site storage units in Los Angeles that are climate controlled that we can utilize. That's it. Like, we're done. There is no other space to put it in. So we must go to another space. We must go to a space that is specifically for archiving and the transferring and storage. So I put to you that in the next PNB meeting that it be on the formal agenda for longer discussion about how can we get the archives a new home.
Brian, how big a home are we talking? Let me ask the question a different way. Would it make sense to consider possibly being somewhere other than L.A. where property values are small enough that you could actually get a facility like you need?
Personally, I would love to go to Colorado, but that's just...
or we could send you to Minnesota where it's already cold.
Right, already cold. I think because of digital age, I think maybe 6 or 7 years ago I would have said no because the stations wouldn't have accessibility to it. But now in the digital age, we can do that. We can be in wherever is appropriate. And actually, Paonia, Colorado, has the lowest humidity in the country, so I'm very happy with that. And one of our affiliate stations is there.
Rip.
Yes, I certainly want to thank Brian for all his work because the affiliate stations really use the archives. In fact, it's probably the original reason that other radio stations were attracted to Pacifica a couple decades ago. And begin, and what we know today is the affiliate program. So thank you, Brian. I have a couple questions, and one was about the housing, and that just enforces to the board that we need to be thinking about many things when we are the stewards of this foundation, and that includes the protection of the archives, including a capital campaign for a building, which is a huge, huge challenge that we're going to have to face. But I want to remind the board that there was a motion in September, and it had to do with funding, emergency funding for the archive material. And in that motion, we specified a February 2007 meeting where Brian would bring forward some recommendations, where he's gone out and done some homework for us to find out what steps we need to take to preserve, in a priority basis, the material that he has in the archives. And in fact, we were going to allocate special funding to really spur this thing on. It was a motion by AC and co-sponsored by Doc Bethune and myself. As I understand it, that motion is actually still currently on the books and in force. And I have spoken to Brian, but I'd like you to appraise the board of what you've done so far to that. And I understand that at the board level, there are a few questions about the funding, and we're working on that. To those of you who aren't party to that, we're working on that with a number of members of the board. But could you speak to maybe give a heads up on what we're going to get from you, Brian?
Right. All right, so what I have is sort of this $150,000 for the next 2 years in my head. That's a huge project for the archives staff to take on in its current state. We're still working off of the archives fund drive day where we do development and everything else that we do. So again, the sort of idea of sort of to prove to you what we can actually do and what the outcomes are is to sort of look at 1968. That would be thousands of tapes. You know, it would be no small feat, but it can sort of like show us the process again through the grant work that we've already done, send them to Philadelphia, have them preserved, bring them back, and then start working on the database correction and everything else, and also distribution and availability through the website so that people outside of Pacifica can have access to those recordings. So again, sort of the idea is to sort of only take the money that we can actually utilize. There's certainly no reason for us to assess stations money that we can't actually spend within the time period that's allotted. So I would say rather than $150,000, let's look at this, how many tapes in 1968 do we have? Then talk to George Blood. He actually did give us a price break. The old price was about $98 per tape for the transfer. We've sort of worked out a way to where it's somewhere between $54 and $98, depending upon the tape, the condition, and the length.
Yeah, I think LaVarne was going to also address this issue.
But those aren't the only costs, though, associated. It's not just $100 a tape. You've got cataloging to do. There's other costs, I would assume.
Right. The 98, that's just for the transfer. The rest of it, you know, when we talk about the adopted tape, it is $250 per tape. The $250 per tape has the $98 per tape for the tape transfer, plus database correction, somebody actually listening to the recording, and then making it available through the website, you know, transferring it to MP3 file, and the various standards and practices that we've sort of risen ourselves to. The standards and practices through the Grammy Foundation, you know, in applying, we have a pending Grammy Foundation grant which will be announced in March, whether we receive it or not. All right, I'm done.
But I don't think before LaVarne, I just want to get clarification now. His proposal.
I'm not going to speak to that now because it's going to take too much time.
Okay.
I can speak to that tomorrow, the motion.
Okay.
I have another question.
Because we don't know how much he's asking for this each year.
That's why I didn't.
So we'll talk about it.
Take a lot of time.
Okay, thank you.
That's why I'm going to ask.
LaVarne and then Rob, and that's going to exhaust the time.
Okay. Brian, I was sitting down with Lonnie, and he had on his computer, and it showed like the distribution of pledges and income for the fund drives. So just want to know, perhaps Lonnie or Brian, do you have like a distribution in terms of where your pledges come from throughout the U.S.? Like, you know,
right.
What
I think it's just right before I came here was when Mariana Berkovich and Sean Dallas balanced the entire fund drive, the $256,000+, balanced it to the penny. So now that we can do that, now we can start doing the analysis of demographics, who our major donors are, what premiums were the most popular, that sort of thing. But yes, because of the promotional aspect, the 30 interviews that I did on internet radio and free speech TV, the demographics came from Alaska. We got donations from Switzerland. We got, you know, people were listening online. Our online broadcast brought in thousands of dollars. I think it was 26% of the total was from the online because we went outside of the five listening stations through the affiliates, through From the Vault, which promoted it, and through interviews that even crossed those borders.
Rob. Okay, thank you.
Brian, I'm wondering what kind of thought you've given to taking the tapes that you have and trying to put together more of a narrative history of the social changes and the movements that Pacifica has been involved in and helped articulate throughout the second half of the 20th century. one of the things in the programming policy which seemed to make a lot of people nervous was our notion that every day we should be telling people about the events, the people, and the freedom struggles that we believe represent the philosophy of Pacifica. And I'm just thinking that one of the things that we're getting toward, but we still aren't quite at the point of, is from a more scholarly point of view, linking some narratives to the recordings that we have for some of these movements.
Right. Well, that's exactly what we did with Amy Goodman. In the protest rally demonstrations, you'll be able to click there, look at the recording, the description, listen to the audio, read the transcript, and look at what Amy Goodman says about that event, not only in terms of what Pacifica is, but what it did mean to the historical chronology of social movements. So that's just the first one. Mm-hmm. Now that we have that, now we can start repeating it. And as we sort of gather this chronology of tapes, then we can really start that narrative. You know, the Pacifica book will be published, just not this year.
And I just want to reiterate, we recognize that the time allotted to these staff reports is not enough time. The staff report given the most time will rotate meeting to meeting. So at other meetings, Brian will have an expanded time, and some affiliates will have an expanded. It's affiliates. That's right. And so on. So that's the time for this. Did you want to wrap up quickly, Brian, with any comments?
No, other than thank you very much for letting me come and present to you. You know, it's not really a requirement that the archives director comes and presents to the board. I've only been presenting since 2002, I think, when the interim board first became together. So it's really important for me to know that you guys want me to come and tell you what's going on with the archives, that you know, that you do care, and you know, and that the archives staff, when I go back, let them know that you really did hear me, and it certainly was a celebration when they heard that you guys cared enough to pass a motion. So thank you very much.
Thank you.